Welcome to the Business Vitality Podcast. My name is Catherine Canty. I am the host and an executive coach. I work with teams, individuals, and leaders to help create measured leadership change. We do that using practical applications, and our clients are creating 100% measured results as seen by those around them. Not necessarily what I think or what they think, but what the other people are seeing. And they are being recognized for the hard work that they're doing. If you're interested in learning more about some of the work that we're doing, you can learn more at CatherineCanty.com. I would love for you to subscribe to this show, to Business Vitality. This is my way to continue to pay it forward and share business best practices. Stay tuned and listen to the interview. Thanks for being here. Matt Paradise, you are the founder of Matt Paradise Consulting, found on the web at MattParadise.com. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. It really is a joy, and I'm excited to have this conversation with you today.
So, three sections is what I heard of the book: the environment of where we live, the second section, the behavior and the financial psychology, just kind of understanding really the deeper, the whys of all this stuff. And I love that you included addiction, you know, how we were raised with money, because that is legitimate. If we're going to overcome financial frustrations, we got to understand that a lot of the stuff was given to us back at the age of three and we didn't even realize it, but subconsciously this mess is in there deep and we've got to understand it so we can overcome it. So the first section, environment of where we live, second, behavior and financial psychology, and that third section, the nuts and bolts. I love that you call the budget, like it really shifted in my head. I felt it shift in my head, a budget, because everybody's like, oh, budget's no fun. But a budget is just a list of our priorities. Just that's exactly what you said. It is what is most important to us. And I think that is a beautiful way to look at a budget. It's not red and green. It's just make a list of what's important. Yeah, I want to be able to have a roof over my head. I want to be able to have a car to drive. And I want to be able to have groceries. And then after that, like what's most important? And that's okay for us to say that we have this thing that's important to us, or we have that thing that's important to us. And the budget just allows us to stay focused, and focused people can overcome a lot of, you know, crazy curveballs that get handed to them just over the course of life, which is going to happen to all of us. And I can't help but want to ask this question. You've overcome homelessness, addiction, cancer, and I can't even begin to imagine anything else. Can you just kind of talk, as we kind of begin to wrap up, I know this is a big question, but like, how do these experiences shape your view on wealth and success? Because not everybody gets all these different things given to them at one time in one life. And you've been handed a lot of different cards along the way. How does it shape your views?
In so many ways. By now, listeners have noticed that I can tend to ramble. So I'm thinking in my mind, how can I make this concise and not keep people here for three more hours? So I suppose we'll start with the first hurdle that you mentioned, homelessness. I grew up in Connecticut. My parents moved our family to a rural area, rural meaning that I believe that there were more cows than farms. Lots of trees, beautiful, beautiful area that I did not appreciate that beauty when I was a teenager. So come my sophomore year, I really faced existential crisis, we'll call it. So I saw the life that my dad lived, and he overcame phenomenal abuse, trauma, variety of things in his story, and sacrificed his hopes and dreams to become an iron worker. And was extremely hard work, long, difficult hours. He started before OSHA really put in some safety protocols. And for anybody who's ever done construction, I can leave it there. You might imagine what that entails. And sacrificed to give his family what he didn't have. And I saw his life as a cynical teenager as something that I did not want. I didn't want to come home exhausted and filthy clothes. My friend's parents came and picked them up in a suit and looked well put together. And my dad had holes in his jeans and was the traditional blue collar. But the piece that he had lying on his head, lying his head on his pillow in hindsight was phenomenal. The existential crisis was, I didn't like the traditional path of education. I didn't like school and learning. And I may have been diagnosed with a variety of things if it were today as a neurodivergent kiddo, but I ended up arguing with teachers. Teachers don't like that. It really didn't go well. I have in my past as well, family alcoholism. And for me, I saw it in my grandparents who glamorized alcoholism. My grandfather was a businessman, successful, international. He had a story of growing up in rural Maine. My grandmother had dirt floors. They were high school sweethearts. He went off to Korea. And when he came back, became a draftsman, some courses at MIT, and then became a successful businessman running businesses as president and the such. And they had epic parties. And as a little kid, I would always have sips of their alcohol, whatever it was, Johnny Walker or otherwise. And that was the vision that I had of, wow, this is amazing. This is glamorous. This is so much better than the struggles that my dad has of asking them for help and trying just to put food on the table and getting by, but of incredible sacrifice. Because as a teen, I didn't know all those things, even though I thought I knew everything. Drugs and alcohol really gripped me in ways that if someone has never experienced it, it's really hard to describe or imagine. But in high school, I drank every day on the way to school, and I overdosed when I was in school. The nurse called 911 and the ambulance brought me to the hospital, and moments later I would have died had I not had that medical intervention at the time. And my parents, in protecting my two younger brothers, gave me an ultimatum: sober up or get out. And one, sobering up isn't that easy, but two, I didn't want to. For any real change, and for listeners who have not experienced addiction, if you've ever wanted to change maybe a character trait, maybe something in your life that's deep, maybe it's exercise and health, there needs to be a combination of motivations, both intrinsic and extrinsic motivations. Intrinsically, we need to want that change and go after it. And outside of us, extrinsically, we need people to help us out. Sometimes a quick, swift kick in the pants out of love, but also some guidance, some encouragement along the way. And there were people, plenty of swift kicks for me. At the time, I didn't want that change. Eventually, after that ultimatum in my sophomore year, I was 15, moved out and didn't have a plan or a place to go. I just walked and bounced around, stayed in crack houses, slept outside, found a friend's couch, their parents' couch or floor. I remember a week that I spent in a friend's treehouse until her dad came and was like, he can't stay there. Like, that's not okay. And kicked me out, and I walked more. And it was intense. It's a lifestyle that leads inevitably to either death, jail, or insanity. And I had enough of an upbringing to know that selling drugs and doing drugs and that entire world was wrong. Every time I tried to change, I was just dragged right back in. And the house where eventually a couple of teens and I were living, and we had parties and sold drugs out of it, was raided frequently by the police, knew that I had to change out of that situation and moved away from it. But anybody who's ever had that urge to change a character trait or something that you didn't like, wherever we go, if we move to a different place, we're still there. Our baggage is still there. My flaws were still there. And there was a lot of internal work that needed to be done. Eventually, I had a mentor who reached out and invited me to a Bible-based drug recovery program. And at first, I was like, no. in hindsight, it was like an angel sent directly just for me, because I was on probation at the time with court ordered drug treatment courses. And I just ignored it. I was like, whatever. I don't want that. I don't need that. I did not have hope for my own future. And when we lack hope, and again, whether we have a background with drugs or alcohol or not, when we lack hope for a better future, the choices that we tend to make in the present moment generally are not in our future selves' best interest. Mm-hmm. And that's how I was living day in and day out, destroying my life, destroying my relationships. But this person, shout out Eric Jones, cared about me and had a vision for my life that I didn't yet have. And he continued to encourage me. I'm a musician. I play percussion still now. And he invited me to come and play. He had a Best of Boston band that he was in. And I came out, played with his band. Eventually, his goal was to see me well. And again, was as a mentor. And I mentioned the word mentor multiple times, because for those now of us listening on the other end, and we have some more maturity, maybe we don't have everything perfect. I know I surely don't. We still have a lot to offer to the young adults who just need us, who need a little nudge, who need a little hope and direction. We can provide that. And for me, that's made all the difference. So from there, I moved to Massachusetts. I needed a job because selling drugs doesn't work. I tried a gas station for a week. I worked at a pizza shop for a day, bounced around, tried all these things. I did construction for a year, and that was horrible, and lots of stories, but we don't have time to go into that. We'll just say Jason called his construction company fifth times a charm company, and let your imaginations run wild with that one. I applied to a place called American Consumer Credit Counseling, and I was at the time 19 years old. So between 15 to 19 was really a rough, rough patch that really just by grace survived. Eventually started going to the Bible-based drug recovery program and finding that spiritual nourishment and reading the Bible, being around other people who are believers and had faith, completely transformed who I was from the inside out. And there was a period of time, a lot of work with that. When I applied to the job, I didn't have an ID. So think about that in today. So this was 1999, throwing out there a little bit some my age, but in 1999, I didn't have an ID or social security card or any of that documentation, because I had spent 4 years outside of anybody's watchful overseeing eyes. And Donna, who's still there now, walked down with me to our local bank after my first paycheck, because they gave a young kid a chance. And she told the banker, "You can cash his check. We trust him. He is who he says he is." And I had enough money to buy some food and pay some rent. I spent 20 years and I continued to learn and grow. I always love learning, though not to traditional sense. So different certifications in credit counseling and debt management and identity theft and risk assessment, and obtained my GED, obtained some college, some different things that I brought additional value to help serve clients. And eventually, after seeing lots of people with lots of debt, oftentimes hundreds of thousands of dollars in credit card debt, I had the thought, well, why can't we be more proactive? And at the same time, spread our message of getting out of debt, managing finances, and getting back into control. So I, with a couple others, established the education outreach group. And we went to all different hundreds and hundreds of different organizations that we partnered with. I was able to get into places where I never thought that I'd ever be, as a kid who didn't think that they'd live to see 20 years old. So now in my early 20s, I was in boardrooms at the Federal Reserve Bank and working with financial institutions and employee assistance programs, as well as remembering people who needed hope directly, and it affected their getting by. So lots of shelters and lots of places where financial education was critical, but not always provided, and was phenomenal. I left there in 2018 and ultimately, my wife and I adopted a child, and he had more needs than our demanding jobs really allowed for. Because at that time, I was running the education outreach group, going out speaking, as well as managing other speakers and doing the administrative work and all of that after hours when I came home. My wife is a biochemist and manages global stuff and wicked smart in Boston speak. So I left, and we created a plan that I'd start my own business so that I'd have the flexibility to get him to school, to get him the additional help that he needed. And 6 months after, I was diagnosed with bile duct cancer, and it's a pernicious disease. That's just brutal. So by grace, I was able to receive chemo, radiation, and in 2021, a liver transplant. And the medical trauma is real for my wife still, because in July 2018, I was teaching a class in Boston, and on the way home, didn't feel well, went home and woke up literally, had fallen out of bed and in a pool of blood, and was able to, I was home alone, was able to dial 911 and rush to Mass General Hospital. And as soon as I got there, coded on the table, and they were over me with the paddles and told my wife that it was unlikely that I'd survive the night. And it was amazing, just that being in a world-class institution certainly made all the difference. I needed 8 bags of blood to be transfused, and was in the ICU, surgical ICU for a little while. All that being said, my story is one of pain to purpose. We all go through challenges, and not everybody is great as the challenges, and you might hear the extreme stuff in my life. But I know every single person who's listening has gone through hard stuff. Don't compare it to, wow, I've never coded on the table, I've never overdosed. That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. However, I know at the same time, you've gone through periods of pain and hurt and frustration and times where hope felt bleak. There is always hope. The pain that we experience is ultimately so that we can relate all the more to others. And for me, I've been involved with the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation, and now as a patient advocate, creating some different programs to help patients, caregivers, legacy caregivers, as well as research and medical staff to raise awareness, but also just strengthen the community. The organization's tagline is that we are stronger together. There's strength and unity and hope in research, and there is always hope. So many people in this past handful of years I found have had cancer or know someone who has had cancer. It's a huge issue. There's a good chance for people listening, some of you may have had cancer. If not, someone that you love or a neighbor or colleague most likely has had to go through that journey. And it's heavy, and it's emotional, and it's weighty. It's also part of what makes us human. Before we started recording, we were talking about dreams and goals and visions and hopes, and ultimately how they can be messy in a world of AI that wants to smooth things over and paint a prettier picture. That pain is part of our humanity, ways that we can connect with each other in compassion that AI never will be able to do.
It's a beautiful answer, and I'm pretty much speechless. So, Matt, if someone wants to get in touch with you and just continue to learn the work that you're doing, they're curious about the experiences that you had, they're looking for hope, what is the best way to get in touch with you to keep learning with you and receiving the hope?
Thanks for asking. My website, mattparadise.com, has my book is available through there. There's a lot of free resources. All the extra resources that I put in the book, even if you're not interested in buying it, you can still have access to all the book bonuses and things like that in the free resources on my website. There's also a link to reach out and connect with me, whether directly email or LinkedIn. but mattparadise.com.
Matt Paradise, you are the founder of Matt Paradise Consulting, found on the web at mattparadise.com. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for this opportunity, and I've enjoyed speaking with you, Catherine. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the episode. If you like it, please subscribe, share this episode or this show with other people around you. The greatest form of a compliment is a referral. I really appreciate them. And if you think that you want to learn more about some of the work we're doing, I encourage you to reach out to CatherineCanty.com. You can schedule a call or just continue to read articles and information that we post out there. Thank you so much for being here.